Hi, everybody. Ryan here. Just to let you know, we just recorded this podcast this afternoon, and we did it in person. And unfortunately, there was quite a bit of audio interference, so I cleaned it up the best that I could. And especially those first couple seconds sound a lot worse, but then it does improve pretty quickly right after that. So just bear with us. I thought it was a good enough episode that, despite the technical difficulties, that we would run it anyway. And with that, I'll let the tape roll. Thanks so much.
So this is love. In the movie. So this is love.
My brain is broken.
It's like Cinderella or something. Or Sleeping Beauty, I don't know. Ryan! I'm so excited you're here sitting in my home. My filthy, filthy kitchen. Is it cold? I should close that window.
No,
Did it
it's
just get
fine.
cold? You're okay?
I mean, I just walked, so
You're warm.
I'm warm.
And I'm cold. So today is November 8th, which has given us just enough time
To shower.
slam down a few awkward meals.
It totally. The meals that I have eaten in the past like 48 hours have been the least healthy in like ages.
I had a like a I'm gonna call it a sleeve.
Okay.
A sleeve of goldfish.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that's a radiator. That's an
Okay.
awful, terrifying radiator. Yeah, it is interesting, the undercurrent of
Lots of cheese.
anxiety. Yeah, even when it was over, it was the food for me is one of the very first
Yeah.
things. It's the canary in the coal mine.
Did you stay up and watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I told myself I wasn't going to, and then.
You did.
And then I did. I just. It always fascinates me what would happen if we did have an election system in which there were, like, just multiple weeks of voting. Like, would we still have the spectacle? Like, we're sort of seeing it now because a lot of states have early voting, but those don't get counted until, like, the day of. So there is still the spectacle of the day of the election. And I just. I don't really know that it's. I mean, it's good in some respects because it gets people out, but in other respects, it's just like.
The fucking carnival of like
Yeah.
bad graphics.
Yes.
You know,
Horrible
Chuck
graphics that
just
don't work.
walking Chuck Todd like get as excited as he does makes me
Steve Kornacki at that fucking board. I don't know what, like, elixir of caffeine and opioids that he gives to keep that thing running, but jeez. And you feel your like your nerves are like just frayed for like weeks before, and like I'm still feel like I'm coming down from it.
I feel just like, first of all, the whole time I just it kept experiencing it like, you know, the presidential election. I
Yeah.
was like, oh, everything you think is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think I got and still am feeling just really reactive, like surrounding it. If we're gonna talk about the psychosomatic response post. And I think the thing that is I'm watching is how I'm digesting and responding to social media stuff leading up to in the wake of elections and how I don't know, did you have to teach?
When?
Have you taught?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
taught yesterday morning. Wednesday morning, and I taught this morning. I taught basically what I had practiced, which was that I would, like, sit and, like, wait for myself to quiet down, and then I'd get up and do a few poses, and then be like, feel like the fray of my nervous system, and then I'd sit back down and wait again, and then, like, do a few more poses and sit. So I just taught that. People seemed intrigued.
So you did two sits during class, like, in the beginning?
No. There were, like, four sits throughout. So, like...
It's like a wave.
Like, a couple poses and then down. And then a couple poses and then down. And then a couple poses and then down.
Down into restorative or down
no,
into,
down into
sitting?
Sitting.
That's awesome.
Because it's honestly, like... I mean, not even, the, like, election aside. Like, school plus the election plus everything else going on in my life. I just have to, like, take it as read that I, at least for the next year, I'm just going to be wildly overstimulated. And so watching how practice can support that is interesting, because it's not necessarily what most people would intuit. Like, some days it is doing things that are more athletic, but some days it's not, and most of the time it's, like, very much in between. But, a lot of it is just accepting them, like, okay, like, I'm in the thick of it, and, you know, some of this is temporary suffering, and some of it, which is not really requiring a lot of, like, action, it's just the reality of the situation, and others, you know, there are things that can actually be done, like, you know, voting. Did you teach last night, or is tonight the first night you're teaching since?
I taught the night before. I taught Monday night.
Oh, okay. Was it, like, was it a weird vibe?
Yeah, I thought, I mean, not a weird vibe, but it was like,
it was a vibe.
Yeah, there's
a vibe.
There's a vibe. And I was like, we'll work through my coping mechanism, which is, you know, it was a slow flow where, you know, I don't know how slow we went. it was more of like, let's move it through and hit the ground.
Yeah.
And then I yelled at everybody to vote in a loving way.
Cute.
And, yeah, so this will be, but I feel like I haven't, you know, I've, like, talked to Nick about it, but I haven't, you know, I haven't had many conversations with people outside of these walls since. And it seems to me like there's, like, a lot of different reactions that it's unsurprising. Folks are having, like, oh, I think I could have been so much worse. And people are like, it could have been so much better, and everything in between.
Yeah, I have that looking at the question three in Massachusetts, being like, who the fuck are those 32%?
I know! When I saw those numbers, I remember when I saw it was like 3,000 yes and 1,000 no, like at one point really early, and I was like, who are those fucking people? Where are, what? Maybe they misunderstood, you know, and then I'm like, bargaining. Maybe they misunderstood.
Well, I would venture to guess that there were some people that misunderstood. I think I did hear from other, like, not folks that I know, but folks that have, like, family elsewhere in the state, that there was some confusion as these things are purposely written to do. That, like, people thought that a yes was a new law, as opposed to just upholding a law that was already in existence. And, like, that confirmation bias or not confirmation bias, depending on how people are viewing it, if someone's on the fence, like, I bet you there's a significant amount of the vote that if they were unsure, they would just uphold what was already there. because that's just the psychology of some folks.
Yep.
However, I do think that anything you put on the ballot is going to have some, like, threshold of, like, 20% opposition, no matter what. Like, you could put the most, like, I don't know, the most ridiculous thing on the ballot that, like, everybody...
Skinning puppies publicly.
Is bad.
It's bad.
Like, and there would still be 20% opposition to that. Like, so it's really that, like, 12, 13% that I'm like,
who
the fuck are you? And maybe some percentage of that is a misunderstanding. I would also be curious to if there would be any way to know, I don't know how it was on your ballot, but question 3 in the Somerville ballot was the only thing on the back of the ballot.
Yeah, mine too.
So I wonder if there was some threshold of people who just abstained accidentally. But still, it was like...
When I walked in, they were like, make sure you flip the thing over.
Oh, yeah, they were like...
Flip it!
There were like 12 poll workers and like just me voting when I went in. It was like a Tuesday afternoon, like the first Tuesday that you could vote. And they were all like... frantically trying to help us. Like, this is funny and great and wonderful that, like, all of these folks are here, like...
I saw the ballot worker that was, when I was putting mine in, she looked at my votes. It was hysterical. I was like, is there a question, first of all? But she was like, because they have the privacy thing that's useless. Like, what is that? They, like, put this privacy thing on and then take it out.
And then
look
at it.
Slowly look at it and insert it. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot. So I've been thinking a lot about hate and why it exists, you know, just. And a buddy of mine put something up on Facebook that, you know, was. A call to, it was one of those, like, infographic-y things that was, like, a call to white women. Like, hey, stop listening to your husbands kind of thing. And, you know, when you look at the breakdown of how people voted in this country, it's white people fucking things up, and it's white women.
Well, it's white women because they're the people who are perceived to be able to be flipped.
Yes. Yep.
Which is probably to some fairly large extent possible, but I don't know that we could say with any amount of certainty that 79% of white women were just because their husbands... No. I mean, you could, if you want to make a bigger argument
for
systemic racism and systemic homophobia and systemic transphobia, like, sure, like, let's have that, but, like, and buried within that, yes, there are probably some women who will not vote, like, differently than their...
household.
Yeah. But... Yeah, I just... I don't know how the conversation is useful and helpful. I don't know how helpful the infographic the infographic just on its own is one thing that people can parse how they want to parse it, but the infographic with both the sort of aggression of fucking white women and equally with the response, the virtue signal of the response of, like, but not me.
Well, so here's the one of the issues for me, and this is, like, even beyond that.
Yeah.
When I think about what the call to action is, personally.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we can talk, you know, in theory about...
We can blame people.
We can blame people in theory, but, like, when you put something up like that, most people, because they're essentially kind, will think to themselves, okay, how does this apply to me?
Yeah.
What can I do? And it's something that I think about all the fucking time. Yeah. Like, and I think, okay, well, let me look to my relationships in my immediate and extended family, people that vote differently than I do, and let me look at why and try to understand. Because it's not... I think the thing that isn't getting enough of the conversation is access, I think, access to education for many of these fucking women, you know? Yeah. Like, you go to the Midwest, and this is not all women in the Midwest. Many of them are, you know, going to Ivy Leagues, of course, but statistically, not as many are going to, like, liberal coastal fucking colleges. A lot of them are getting married a lot younger, they're having kids younger, and I'm not saying this to mean it's not, they don't have a responsibility, just like, of course I am gonna pop out of fucking high school with the political beliefs I do. Like, if you look at the fucking privilege that goes with some of that, it's like, so I have both a combination of, like, deep rage and disappointment and sometimes hate towards women voting against their own self-interest and voting with hate.
Yeah.
What I see is they're just making a hateful choice. But far more useful than that is to reflect on, okay, why? How did that get built? And so yelling at them to do X, Y, or Z just makes them dig their heels in more. I know, because some of them are in my life.
And because we all have the instinct to, when yelled at, dig our heels in.
Yeah.
More.
Especially when you do it with, like, being, you know, especially when you come from a place of unflappable superiority and condescension.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it goes back to that book I was talking to you about a few episodes ago. Failing Democracy.
Oh, yeah.
And it talks about that in this book, which I need to get through, but it's a little dense. But this, as far as I've gotten into it, you know, the whole point of it is the reason we're in this situation is because we don't have equal and adequate access to civics education, to people understanding the importance of voting, and also understanding, like, the history and the mechanics and, like...
And the systems that were established that were anti-small-d democratic from the moment people set foot on from Europe on this continent. Like, it is so systemic how, like, and to actually begin to unpack that is, like, really difficult. But also, if that were, you know, as with all things, like, younger people can just make different connections in their brains a lot quicker. So, like, if that were just, like, inserted into, you know, regular education, it, like, public school education, it would make a huge, huge difference when people, you know, and there would still be conservatives and there would still be liberals, but there would be a common understanding of, like, let's have the conservative versus liberal really be about, like, how much money are we going to spend and how are we going to spend it versus you shouldn't have rights and you should have rights.
And the whole job of the public school system from the advent of this country initially was just to create an adequate voting populace, a group of people that were literate enough that they could vote meaningfully. And that has become farther and farther away from what we're doing. You know, everything is about, like, career prep, not about, like, how to be a citizen. So I have softness for these women when I think about the larger systemic fucking issues. And I
also have soft, you know, I also have a have to try to have an understanding of where that segment of the male population, like, how much hurt is there to be voting on things that, like, are taking away people's rights to just be, to vote, to, you know, and who see, you know, for instance, in Georgia, a black woman running and, like, immediately, like, just shut off that possibility to, like, not actually be able to be like, oh. And then even to see the person that they want to vote for, like, fucking around with a fair election, that doesn't cause someone to take pause and be like, wait a second. Like, this isn't right. This isn't right. And so, you know, I take umbrage with the idea of, like, stop listening to your husbands. Because I don't think that that's... I think that might, in certain cases, be happening. But shouldn't we just look at the broader issue and just be like, you know, these people are voting against their own self-interest.
Also, what the fuck relationships are we talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
That to me is a pathological situation. If the women we're talking about are women that vote because of fear of their husbands, what you're talking about is I'm imagining a smaller group.
Yeah.
But a smaller group that themselves are fucking victims of some sort, if it is so...
Yeah.
If there is fear involved in voting somehow the other way. Which, again, it's like, okay, well...
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that?
Yeah.
But that's interesting, though, that you... Because when you started to talk about, like, the pain that those men might be, and I was like, oh, I don't have... Oh,
No. But the underlying...
You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, my response to that is like, oh, I don't have... Oh.
Yeah, and that's okay, because you don't, like...
I want to. I think it's smart to do that.
And it's really hard for me to, like, aim my understanding. I wouldn't even call it compassion. Like, aim my understanding in their direction. But it's... Probably because they, like, could you, I don't know if you've ever had the experience, because I have, of a family member having such cognitive dissonance with your embodiment, as it were, because you hold some portion of your identity that they can't reconcile with also loving you. And that, to watch that, is, as much as I might be angry at them for, like, holding the views that they do, that cognitive dissonance is, like, if that weren't there, I could just be like, oh, fuck you, I don't want to, I'm not going to, you're not my family. Like, I really could just do that. Because I'm not talking about someone in my, like, immediate family. That's what I was looking for. But to watch that cognitive dissonance is really fucking interesting. Because they're like, on the one hand, this is the thing that I've always been told. But I've known this person since, like, the moment, or, like, weeks after they were born. So... How do I... Huh? Like, and we see it time and time again, and I mean, I don't love that, like, the way that certain folks have to get rights is to, like, for enough people to, like, meet someone in that group to, like, turn their ideas around. Like, that's not really the... But it is a function of humanity that, like, if you are someone who is sort of blind to your implicit bias racially, and all of a sudden it's brought to your attention. That's a painful experience. It is in no way a result of the person who brought that to your attention, just by being the person that they were, you know. But we have to acknowledge that, like, that's painful. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of unwilling to step into that position. And there's a way to call people into that exploration skillfully. And then there's just the instant gratification of calling them evil. And there will always be...
Or weak, or cowards, yeah, or idiots, or mouth-breathers, or anything I've called,
yeah,
them.
Yeah. and then there will always be particularly the marginalized people of color on the sidelines being like, yeah. Welcome.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad you're...
Oh, hi!
Oh, hi. How are you?
On the Seth Meyers show, Amber does a whole... Well, I'll put a link in.
Okay.
It's the funniest fucking... It's...
Yeah.
Exactly what you just... So I continue to reflect on being a white woman and what's my fault and what can I help with.
Yeah.
And I continue to struggle with, okay... from anecdotally, I have a few places where I can share my opinion on some things, and I have a few relationships that I am in my most trying to be with all the resources I have. I am trying to maintain those relationships and change people's mind.
Yeah. That radiator is gonna, like, cook me.
Yeah. And I'm, like, freezing my tits up.
And then the other thing that I think about is, like, I don't think that the sort of memification of those exit poll graphics is necessarily a bad thing. Because that is gonna wake some people up. Like, that's gonna make some people think. For sure. I mean, we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't. I mean, we might. But, you know, we wouldn't directly be having this conversation today if it weren't for that. But, like, some people are really skilled at using their Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to do that type of stuff. And I'm not. And a lot of people aren't. And some of it is because, like, it is just too overstimulating. Like, I'm not equipped to I'm equipped to have a conversation with someone one-on-one. I'm equipped to have a conversation with, like, 12 people in a room about yoga. Even that is, like, super nerve-wracking. So then you, like, multiply that by social media, and it's, like, this deeply... anxious,
yep,
thing. Maybe at some point I will get over that. But I still have found time and time again that I would rather change one person's mind by having a conversation with them or by just, like, being who I am than try to change 1,000 people's minds by putting a meme up on social media. I'm not saying that that doesn't have its place and isn't helpful. I'm not saying that there aren't people who I'm really grateful for who have that sort of Instagram presence, so that, like, when I turn on my Instagram, there's other beautiful non-binary genderqueer,
yeah, yeah,
folks that I can be like, oh, okay, I'm not alone. Like,
yeah.
But I don't, at this point in my life, have that in me.
I totally get that. I think, like, I'm very grateful for the people doing the work they're doing on social media, and, like, you know, I can nitpick and critique and shit some of the yeah. approaches as being skillful or not skillful or whatever, you know. But I'm grateful they're doing it, because the energy of maintaining a thread where people are
losing it,
it's a lot of energy.
It's a lot of energy.
And then it's a lot of emotional energy. And that's why a lot of people will be like, I'm shutting off comments, or I'm taking it down, all that kind of stuff. And I think, too, even, like, I don't have the bandwidth to do that and to teach, you know, because it's, like, already putting yourself in front of people, I think.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable and communicating an idea.
Yeah.
Requires emotional energy that has to be restored. So it's not like I then want to go home and be like, here's a picture of me practicing in a sports bra and a bathing suit, because I want you to see that it's okay to be fat. And practice yoga. Like, there's sometimes I'm like, man, I should have just, like, if I, man, why didn't I? And I'm like, no, I can't. I don't have it in the tank.
Yeah.
But I'm so grateful for the people that do.
Yeah.
Speaking of branding oneself and then rebranding oneself as a yoga teacher. I don't really know how to segue after that.
Okay. You were doing a really great job.
I know. And then, I was right at the top of the hill, and then it came off.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a interesting trend. And it's not a new trend. I think I'm going to call it the, like, fuck yoga trend, or the not yoga trend. And it's this thing where people kind of either, as a marketing ploy, like, try to tear down yoga, or at least the sort of culturally accepted, like, delivery mechanism of yoga, and usually making, like, really, like, they're not being inaccurate about their criticisms, but then they go into the classroom and just
do it anyway.
Do it. And in my experience, at least, in every time I've taken a class with someone who has sort of gone down that rabbit hole a little bit, are really kind of just upholding the same standard that they're trying to, like, they aren't actually, like, deconstructing anything per se. And I'm fine if that's just, like, a philosophical, like, rabbit hole that you went down, and, like, in your public classes were just, like, trying out new ideas. Like, that's different to me. If you, like, were to walk into class and be like, you know, I've been thinking about some things, and, you know, I'm really questioning this, I'm really questioning that. And so, like, let's see what that looks like. I don't know. It's hard to do this without having, like, a distinct hypothetical. I think that's great. But then when you, like, build a brand around it, it's so funny to me, because you know in 2 years the person's going to be thinking something completely different. And there's a difference between just letting that process play out, and, like, 1 year you're thinking about this, and the next year you're thinking about that, maybe even write a book this year, and then a book 2 years later, and they directly contradict each other. Like, that's fabulous. I love to see that process. But the second you, like, solidify it around a brand, it's just
circle the horses perfect. And yeah. change the typography. Here we go.
it's a little and
can we be specific?
We
don't have to be. I'm looking.
No, let's not be specific. Because I think this is a more general. I think this is a more general topic, and I don't actually know. If I feel this way about the specific post that I sent you, because I haven't gotten down the rabbit hole long enough, but I'm seeing this sort of more and more, and it's a little, I think, and see what you think about this. I think people are getting too caught up in what it is they have to teach and not in what the practice actually means to themselves. That was a poorly constructed sentence, but you get the point that I'm trying to make. I'll pause and take a sip. Oh no, I have not. Gate is graciously going to refill my soda.
Oh, and we also have to talk about that. The therapist is going to.
Oh.
And the fight I got in with her about Warrior One.
Fair.
So I think what's happening is people are realizing yoga doesn't maybe mean the same thing it does
to
themselves as it did in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's there's a yoga terrifying, divorce. But not even, like, the divorce to me is like an abrupt stop of, I just throw it all out. And then the other one is, well, no, it's just almost like how a marriage shifts.
Yeah.
You used to bang it out all the time in a hot room or whatever you do.
And now you're yoga just, or marriage.
And now you're just comfortable laying down nearby yoga. And you're like, close enough. And then how do you share that? Because that, too, is yoga, being okay with everything looking maybe a little less fucking urgent and passionate. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's... I mean, I'm just
Alfie,
speaking...
What exactly are you doing behind me? The cat is, like, massaging my back or something. I don't know what's going
on. The cat is... affection starved.
Oh, fair.
I don't have it in the tank the way I used to, so. Alfie's getting what he needs from you.
Say more about that. This is just turning into Kate's therapy.
I know. Wonderful. I do.
I apologize to the people who are now going to write me an email being like, stop recording when Kate's pouring soda.
Listen. Stop telling me what I can and cannot put in my body. Stop recording what she's pouring. I know, that's funny. I hope we get that email. So.
Come closer to the microphone.
I'm coming, but I'm also bringing ice.
No. It's not good for my dosha.
I was just going to ask, is this a fucking pitta thing? I would think this would be good for you.
No. Pittas shouldn't drink.
Shouldn't cool?
Well, because of Vata Pitta. And are we in a Vata season? I don't know what season we're in.
I don't know either.
I think we are in a Vata season.
My brother is all into
Ayurveda. I know nothing about Ayurveda, by the way.
No, neither of us. We know just enough to be dangerous.
Yes, exactly.
My brother's getting really into it, though.
Oh, cool.
I'm telling you, in like a year and a half time, he's going to be a yoga teacher.
Oh, fascinating.
This is like... my brother, I think he had a Trump sign on his front lawn.
Oh, Jesus.
And, but I'm watching him slowly make really interesting choice. He's like a vegetarian. Like, there's things.
Cool.
Things are. People shift.
People shift. End of sentence. End of sentence. People also shit.
So yeah, I think people struggle. I think yoga teachers, after a certain point of time, they struggle to maintain the same relationship they had with yoga in the beginning, because it's the natural course of life is for things to shift. And so then their marketing has to match that, because they start to feel incongruous with what they're saying in the classroom.
Yes. by the way, we need to write an Ayurvedic book that's just called People Shit. An illustrated guide to the doshas.
We don't know that much about this. Guest author. People, it's hysterical. People come to my class at Down Under sometimes and say, "Are you Kate O'Donnell?"
Oh, because
okay. And I'm like, "No."
No, but do you have any questions?
Did you write the book? I'm like, not that one. It's such a beautiful book. Like,
it's a great book. It's a great book. Oh. I do not
dismissive. No,
I,
it's just funny because I didn't write it, and I.
Yeah.
But for a second, people get this glitter in their eye, like. The book I wrote is about, like, being drunk in college. That's so fair. Close. But yeah, you said something that was exciting to me, which is you're talking about teachers rebranding rather than just allowing themselves to have a shift in perspective. And everybody's sort of on the not yoga train, which... Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Yeah.
Except I might be the only one in the camp being like, no. Yoga.
Which brings us to our next portion. Kate and Ryan fight about whether or not we need a scale system before we're allowed to improvise. I switched it to a musical analogy.
Oh, what was the original analogy?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there wasn't an analogy. You just...
Gracefully transitioned.
So... help me set up the context of this one.
Thinking about a mutual friend of ours and other people.
And literally everybody.
If you ever had the, and I think it's kind of an exciting thing to do as a teacher in general, is just like once a year make an effort to go to a couple studios and try classes with some different teachers. And like saying that out loud, I almost want to vomit because it's like, oh, that sounds like so much effort.
Yeah.
But if you could just to like take a moment and try to get a flavor of what people are teaching. Because it changes, and it changes like a school of fish unexpectedly and in chorus.
Yes.
So some things that are happening in the classroom are things that I think, you know, have been maybe happening for a while. One is the vinyasa aerobics, a creative yet somehow scripted narrative arc of what a vinyasa class looks like and how it changes from week to week. And also, at the other end of the spectrum, the new trends in slow flow and restorative yoga, which has moved a little bit in the direction of, no, it's cool.
Could you say a little bit more? Could you describe that?
Didn't I? No, you mean to connect with that. Okay.
Yeah.
So, restorative shapes and slow flow with restorative infused moments that is oftentimes devoid of instruction.
Yeah.
In favor of energetic invitational language to do X, Y, or Z? And have we veered too far to, no, it's okay, do whatever you want, Montessori? Do we need to reel it back in and be referential to some of the quote-unquote original intentions of shapes? Is that enough of a setup?
Yeah, though I don't know about that last clause. Because you could have a multitude of intentions in teaching a particular asana.
structure of the shape.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Like the original structure
the picture.
Of the shape.
I mean, like if I mean we want to, if like we could just say the picture in Light on Yoga. Like we could just put it that way. And the permissiveness, which also happens to a certain extent in the more aerobic classes from time to time, but there does seem to be more of a want in those classes, at least I find, for people to be told like that this is the right way to do it. So like some teachers are able to like they can deliver instruction. I'm not saying that's necessarily good instruction, but they deliver instruction, very mm-hmm. generalized, but instruction in a way that feels authoritative. So people feel confident until they realize that there's nothing really backing that quasi-authoritative instruction up. But there is this tend towards permissiveness, and I don't think that it actually comes from a bad place. I think it actually comes from a really well-meaning place. I think it, whether people know it or not, I think it comes from a place of wanting people to, an acknowledgement of the fact that if you're standing in front of a room full of people, you can only really give generalized instruction, and then you might be able to go around and, like, maybe work with people individually, though I think that that last part gets missed a little bit. I think... To a large extent, it can feel like more of a soothing nervous system response sometimes to not have someone barking instructions at you, even if the barking is done in a quiet, soothing. You know, like, that's a possibility. Like, it is well-meaning. I just wonder if it's gone too far. Because I'm not saying... I don't necessarily think that every human doing yoga needs to, like, go have 2 years of Iyengar before they're allowed to play in the sandbox. Like, that's not what I'm saying. Because I don't think that that's true. But... as a teacher, you have to be clear about the context in which you're teaching, which includes your influences in how you teach asana. And then there's a way to just say, do whatever you want. And there's a way to be like, here's the context. A lunge. From, say, we're in Uttanasana, you just come into a lunge. Step your blank leg back. Okay. So, notice what happens when you bend your back knee. Notice what happens when you straighten your back knee. Like, to actually set the context of the choices that are being made. Because if I was just like, make choices with your legs in the lunge. Or do whatever feels good with the legs in the lunge. People just hold still. Which is not the intended effective do it. They people actually, and this might be just because they haven't thought of other choices and possibilities within the lunge, or it might be that they've been told that this is the only way you do a lunge. You could just give three very distinct choices, or two, or one, to be like, okay, have both blocks to the inside of your foot. What does that feel like in comparison to having one block on the outside and one block on the inside? Like, just notice. And then you might get more specific in terms of, like, notice the feeling of the belly being on top of the thigh and more compressed versus the feeling of the belly being to the inside of the thigh. Like, that might just be something that you explore one day in a lunge. And it can be really quick, and it doesn't have to be this like, your abdomen has organs in it. I'm going to list all the organs.
How can sense you... your pancreas! Sense it!
Like, it doesn't need to be this long diatribe. could be really, really simple. And yes, we need some way, because we are meaning-making machines, to be like, this is a lunge, or this is Warrior One. But then the job of a teacher is to be able to point out all of the possibilities within the context of Warrior One, which could include having the back heel lifted, which could include having the back heel down, which could include having the back leg kind of somewhere in between, you know, could include being really short and really wide. It could be long and narrow, you know, like to, and again, I'm not saying that you do this in one class, because there's too many possibilities. You have to have some organization so that the person's awareness can track through what's being asked. And actually, I think that the systematic tracking of awareness, and systematic doesn't mean necessarily intellectual, you just have to have it. You just have to have a map. Because you got to be, it's that systematic tracking of awareness that has, I think, a large, is a really probably the active ingredient in yoga class that brings benefit.
The systematic tracking of awareness.
And that could be the chakra system. I could have you come into a low lunge and we could say, place your awareness on the crown of your head. What do you feel? Place the awareness in the center of your skull. What do you feel? Place the awareness in your throat. What do you feel? Like, it could be completely esoteric, it could be very well grounded, but you think of things like mindfulness-based stress reduction, that's just a systematic tracking of attention through the body that has been proven to have some positive effect in reducing stress. Is it meditation? Maybe. Maybe not. But within the context of asana practice, that examining of experience through the parts of the body brings benefit unto itself. And maybe you don't examine all of the parts of the body. Maybe you don't track through your whole body while you're in a particular pose, but maybe you just be like, okay, I'm in a lunge, legs. What are all the possibilities that I can feel through my
legs? So are there people not doing that?
Like, oh, yeah.
What are they doing? They're like, step back and
do whatever feels good. Or just, you know, or it becomes so fast that none of those choices are actually possible to actually feel what.
Well, I think you can also do it where you have moments in class where you're not doing that exploration, you are moving fast, and then you slow down and arrive at a moment where you explore.
Yeah, absolutely. But
I've never taken a, and this speaks more to my lack of exploring new classes, but
yeah.
I have yet to take a class where I've felt like do what feels good has been a...
It's not always phrased as do what feels good. It's phrased in any number of different ways, but I still feel like if you're getting in front of the room, you have to teach something. Something. There may be aspects of the class where you're just leading people through a series of poses to it, but you still, in the back of your mind, have an understanding of what the purpose of this is. I may lead people through some long, like, rocking, sliding around on the floor thing at the beginning of class, but that's to a particular effect. I'm not necessarily teaching people how to do those movements exquisitely, because my purpose is to calm the nervous system. But that's part of my job as a teacher, to understand the purpose of what I'm doing, whether or not I feel like I need to be explicit about that or not.
So there are teachers maybe that, if they're newer teachers, are coming from a place of looking at quote-unquote slow flow and restorative classes as being containers for things that go beyond the physical and asana, and feel under-equipped to deal with it in a trauma-informed and sensitive and welcoming way. So, out of fear, maybe what they're doing is, like,
oh yeah, no,
picking up their hands and they're like, I don't want to hurt you!
Yeah, I think that that's probably a large part of it.
And what they do is they value the classes where that you just described, but maybe they don't feel...
No, yeah. They don't feel equipped
to do it. Or they think that that is what's doing... More troubling would be that they think that is what...
Yeah. Or they've... Like, sometimes it is... Like, if I'm in a room full of people that I've taught for a while, I don't necessarily have to articulate all of the choices. Right? Like, if everybody has a similar understanding, like, for instance, in the year-long course that I teach, like, at this point, we've got, like, 5 more weeks left. Like, I really can just, like, okay, everyone come into Tadasana. And, you know, make choices with your legs. Reach your arms overhead.
Make choices with your legs.
Reach the arms overhead. And, you know, like, I don't have to actually give that much instruction. Because they're...
Making choices they're
in
with
it
their legs.
And with their arms. And to a particular purpose. But that's not how I want them to teach. Because it took us a whole semester and a half to get to that point. And I would love to have everyone get to that point, because I think that the interesting part of yoga practice for me is being able to examine my experience in that way, and then realize that there may be aspects of my experience that need a little bit more attention, whether that's like palpating or doing... You know, like, that's kind of my issue with all of the self-massage stuff, is there's no way to actually examine. It's just, like, intervene.
Say more?
We
just got off an on-ramp, and I...
Like, if, to me, the benefit of things like massage balls and other implements of that nature is that they can be really helpful in allowing you to examine parts of your body that you might not be able to get to with your hands, or in positions where, you know, yeah, it's kind of a lot easier to examine what's going on in the musculature of your foot with a massage ball under your foot than it is to, like, bend down and grab your foot and, like, palpate. Like, yeah, that's easy, but then people go into it like they're trying to do a surgical intervention on their foot with a lacrosse ball. And it's like, no, no, no.
We don't have to crush.
We don't have to crush anything. Your muscles did nothing wrong. They're fine. They're not tight. They're not loose. They're just there. And yeah, you might feel places that are a little bit reactive and a little bit constricted. Now let's talk about how to work with that. Like, what's the meaning of that constriction? What's the meaning of that reactive sensation in the muscle? And does leaning into it with more pressure help? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Does going against the length of the muscle help? Does going along the length of the muscle help? Like, you can get really specific in how to, like, adjust yourself in yoga practice. But there first has to be an understanding of, like, wait, what am I actually... Like, what's the meaning of this sensation? Like, is the meaning of my hamstring being tight, that stretch in the hamstring, is the meaning of that, like, my hamstrings are bad and I need to stretch them out? Or is it that, oh, my body's just trying to prevent me from going too far?
And then you throw in the component of nerves, and
yeah.
You might think that you have a tight muscle, and the muscle might be responding as if it's tight, but it's actually just responding to inflammation and
yeah.
Is sensitive to nerve compression, and, like, there's so many
yeah. Well, and then even understanding compression as not a bad thing, like, blows people's mind. Like, if I take your arm and I compress, that's not necessarily a negative experience.
No.
If I compress, that might be a negative experience, but maybe not. If I decompress and pump, you know, I'm taking the joints to the end of their range, but it's not necessarily a, you know, you're compressing your joints all day long. They do just fine. But sometimes they get compressed to the point where there's a symptom of pain. And then it's helpful to learn.
But like compression of nerve. So like I'm working on this thing where I have the sensation all the time that I need to be in pigeon.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be in
pigeon. No, you don't need
it's
to be.
Like, it's like, no, I need to do some fucking core work and some other things to make more space between the vertebra. But what I experience in the... It's just, it's fascinating. But this tangent is interesting because it brings me back to scope of practice again. And you're in school, and I'm so glad. It's just like, fucking yes. And I know you disagree with me on this. And I'm saying this from a position of somebody that I have another job, and I'm supporting myself through that. I just feel like we got to up the game on what's expected from yoga teachers in terms of education.
Yeah.
Like, the kind of things that you're learning are different from yoga, but I'm working with physical therapist and a chiropractor that are at the doctoral level, and there it's this new thing called the integrated spine unit. And it's the coolest fucking thing, and I'm fighting with them every time I go in, and I'm learning so much, and mostly what I'm taking away is like, oh my god, they don't know. And neither do I.
Yeah.
And nobody fucking knows.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows anything, but being able to have those kind of conversations, because more and more students are looking to yoga teachers to have those conversations, which unless you are equipped to have them, you're not equipped to have them.
But the people who are most equipped to have them are like, we don't really know. Or at least that, like, there's a lot of ambiguity there. And there's not a lot. Even, like, imaging tells some things, but doesn't exactly tell the whole story at all.
And it's of a moment in time.
Yeah. So too. It's not like you can go in and get imaging every time you walk into their office. Like, right off the bat.
Mm-mm.
You can't use an image from 6 months ago to necessarily make a treatment plan 6 months out. You know, like, that's always the interesting. But yeah, it just comes down to nobody knows, even if they have a pretty good idea.
No, nobody knows, and we're in the middle of vinyasa aerobics, and Freedom yoga, hashtag, wait, what now? For slow flow. And whose fault is it?
Whose fault is it?
Yeah, whose fault is it that if you look at the yoga terrain, this is what we have? I need someone to blame.
Who do I blame? I don't have a good answer for you on that.
I do.
Yeah, me?
I know who to blame!
Is it my fault?
It is! No, it's not your fault. No, but I mean, I think about my teacher training, and I think, well, that isn't what the heart of the... my teacher training was, but yet this generation of yoga, you know, and I think about the Yoga Works training and the Core Works training and like the independently owned yoga trainings, and part of it was just the constraint of the time and the hunger to equip people to be able to teach one class, you know, like one class that they could go teach publicly, and the emphasis on sequencing, I think, might be...
I would agree with that. I think the emphasis on sequencing is potentially to blame, because it set everybody up to think about 90% of yoga classes as a, like, trek up a mountain.
Or something deeply premeditated from beginning to end and scripted, almost. Like, here's my script for the pyramid or for the wave.
Yeah, and it is good to have some sort of, like... Like, I have a basic outline. If I were to go in and teach a generalized yoga class in which I just wanted to lead people through an experience of yoga practice, I have that. Do all of my classes look like that? No. But it's a good template if I want to explore something more conceptual. But it's still not sequenced in such a way that we're, like, working our way up a mountain. And the class needs an organizing principle. It's just, does if every class is organized around the same organizing principle...
That was never really married to the teacher's practice.
Yes.
I think that's the other piece.
Well, yeah, because like that's, I mean, if you look at...
Focusing on the plan and not on the teacher and what they value.
Exactly. And what their own, you know, what the practice means to them. Like, time and time again, I see people who, like, the crux of their own personal practice is, like, decompressing from whatever, like... highly athletic activity that they do, and then they go into a yoga classroom and teach this, like, vinyasa aerobics, and it's just like, you're not, that's not gonna work long term. It's not gonna work long term. I mean, you can do it. It's not bad. It's not wrong. It's just, it's not gonna work long term, because people have to figure out what the practice means for themselves, and that takes a long time. I'm still figuring it out. And each year it feels different, and shifts and changes. And from people I know that I've been practicing a long time, like multiple, like 4 to 5 decades, they have said that there was no sense of stabilization until, like, 50, 60.
Until they were 50 or 60?
Yeah.
Yeah. That feels about right for most things in life.
Yeah.
If you're lucky to get.
And so it's just... And surprise, I don't want to tell, like, it's, this is not meant to be, like, everyone should stop teaching, because no, it's not what I want to communicate, contrary to popular belief. It's just that, if there's a clarity about what the practice is for you, at least, like, within the context of that week, and then you choose to be like, okay, I'm going to let that just be the backdrop, and, like, I'm going to give people something that's a little bit more familiar in terms of stepping in front of the classroom. I'm all for that. But then at least there is some acknowledgement of the view being sort of settled within the person's practice, like the view of what they're doing in their own practice. And then, yes, they might deliver something that looks like vinyasa aerobics, but it's with the attitude of whatever they did rolling around on the floor that day. And hopefully a little bit of that rolling around on the floor that day makes its way into the class. But, like, at some studios, like, that's just not allowed, right? Like, some teachers have really structured, like, if you work at Core Power, like, you can't go in there and be like, just rock your knees back and forth for like 20 minutes, like, and try to feel your sacrum and your ilia and the thigh bones moving. And the, like, you, You'd be fired in heart. You'd have a revolt from at least half of the students. Maybe the other half would be like, what is this? Let's do this.
And then they would start doing both.
Yeah. Just go right. Yeah. So, you know, I understand that people have to, like, make a living and, like, do what they gotta do. But, I understand that people are, I understand more than ever how hard it is to get through the week, and as much as I practice, I still don't feel like I get enough time to practice nowadays, especially with the amount that I'm working on people hands-on at this point. There's, like, a whole other level of practice that's needed, both from, like, a physical, like, care standpoint, and from a, like, oh, there's a lot of folks. There's a lot of folks.
The next year,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Sunday is the last day of me having, like, of the classes being totally oriented around, like, giving a massage and then getting a massage. Because then we move into A&P, so at least I'll have, like, a little bit of it. It's actually, I think, more the receiving that's particularly energetically challenging. Because I'm very picky about who I go to for body work.
I'm so not. I'm like, even if you're doing a shitty job, unless I don't feel, like, safe. Like,
yeah,
if I
sure,
feel
sure.
like, if I got, like, just something, like, and, but if it's just mediocre, I'm like, fine, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. But I think you are picky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
and it's
you're
also,
so
it's
good.
Also late at night, too. So, like, sometimes, especially if you're, like, the last person on the table, you're just like, can we just... Let's go. I just want to go home.
Do you have any light touch or creepers?
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Oh, yeah.
I wish you could see my face right now. Just slack, slack.
There was a very funny moment where... one of the instructors came over to, like, help, because it was, like, clear that the person who was working on me was, like, not really clear on what to do. And there was a lot of, like... poking
what?
Yoga.
No.
And then in the midst of describing the therapist, the person working on me, describing their confusion, they kept misgendering me, and I could tell that, like, the instructor was aware of that, and then was also aware of the, like, not rightness going on in terms of, like, the touching.
So much was going
on. So much was going on. And I just was, like, trying to telepath to the instructor that, like, don't give a, like, I do not care about the fucking pronouns. I've got to be on this table for another hour.
Shut it down.
We just got to, like, we just got to, like, please just help. We'll deal with deconstructing gender another day. Just.
Oh, God.
This is part of this is the confusion around trigger points, which is just, like, a generic word that
for not
people use, but it's actually, like, two doctors' actual work documenting constriction in muscle tissue that they treated not with, like, pressure so much. They used pressure, I believe, I could be wrong on this, to, like, palpate and find them, but used, like, injections to get the muscle to really, so, like, in the book, which is actually a really useful book to have, there's, like, they show, like, palpation technique on the particular muscle, the spot where they would expect, generally, the trigger point to be, and then how they inject or spray the muscle. But then it just becomes, like, code word for, like, any part of the muscle that feels like a knot is now a trigger point, and we should... like, throw an elbow at it immediately. And I'm just like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Like, there are places to, like, put your elbow down, but few and far between, I find.
So you're gonna set up a shingle and be like, yoga massage therapist? Or are you going to just keep doing yoga, but do what you're doing, and you have this thing? Because I really also want you... I really want to give you money do this shit that you're learning to.
I mean, you can come to clinic.
I really want to go to clinic.
No, my sense is that I will probably try to contextualize two different approaches to working with folks manually. One that is oriented more in a yoga therapy type way, and one that is just like, just overall, like, just standard wellness massage. Like, just, we're just gonna do a massage that is geared towards relaxation, not towards, like,
that was a
body slamming.
That was like a Randy Savage.
Yeah, yeah.
I got cupped the other day.
Oh.
I fucking loved it.
Yeah. Is the cat still behind?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I just don't want to sit on him.
he'll be fine. I have accidentally sat on that. Don't send an email about how I'm an animal abuser. It was an accident. He's fine. Cupping.
Yeah.
Have you ever had it done?
No, I haven't.
So they did it all around
yeah.
the hip, and the way that physical therapist was talking about it was that it was the equivalent of like hitting a muscle's reset button by lifting it this way rather than pressing it.
Oh,
and
sure.
And that both methods are effective, right. But it's just a different. So I'm super obsessed. I have one more session that's covered by insurance, and then I have to just go find people that cop, or I have to buy it on. I'm going to buy it online and just cop myself. Can I cop myself?
I don't know.
I don't know. Just like when I bought dental tools and thought I'm going to be my own dentist. Were you around for that?
I was not around for that.
Anyways, this has been unrolled because how long has it been? I bought dental.
Has this been? No, we're at like just an hour and 16 in. Casual hour 16.
Oh my god, and I'm... What time?
Kate's checking her schedule so that she can...
hop on a call.
Hop on a call and, you know, be the entirety of your Facebook feed. All yoga and wellness Facebook comes out of this kitchen.
Comes out of this kitchen. Oh god.
She sits here all day long, all night long, just... delivering all of the ads to your feeds.
Thankfully, I'm doing more equipping and training other people to do their own.
Oh, fantastic. Wonderful.
Which is good.
Well, this has been unrolled.
Questions, comments, concerns, conversation starters.
Snacks. Hors d'oeuvres.
They can be sent to unrolledpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a website and a Patreon account if you're... Black Friday's coming up and you want to...
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, cool. Have a good time.
Godspeed. Bye.